Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode.
Welcome back to the Magnetic Podcast. I am your host, Steve Schmidt. Today on the show, we have Mason Cosby. Mason is ABM, Scrappy ABM, that is. So Mason started his company. I can't wait to walk through what orange and green are symbolic of, because I actually really, really love your color patterns, and I'm not bullshitting you. I tell you if I did not, Mason. But at a minimum, they stood out to me. And I think in a world where your goal is to stand out in a meaningful way in B2B, companies are hiring you to create content specifically to stand out in specific accounts, which means a lot of research, a lot of, you know, not just record and see how it goes. I'm super happy to have you, another fellow content creator in the house today, Mason, also a founder, also a husband, also a father. So Mason, good to see you, man. It's been about a year or so since we talked, maybe a little bit longer face-to-face. Welcome to the Magnetic Podcast. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing well. Excited for our conversation. Just really appreciate you having me.
Of course, man. That's what we do. We have people on. We talk once in a while. Things resonate. And people take action. And sometimes I am surprised. And I always say, if you're out there listening to podcasts, you probably have the ones you listen to that are the big time ones. There's always something I'm going to challenge you to on the front end. Number one, subscribe to the podcast below, because that's how you're going to find out about more Masons in this world. Number two, play this at 1.5x. If you don't think you have time, I don't have 38 minutes of my life. Cool. Neither do we. But we're taking time to give it to you today to give you advice. So if ABM and executing against that with content are here, 1.5x is bad boy, and take some notes, right? Because Mason's been in the game a bit. I've been in the game a bit. We're probably going to tell you as much what we do know as what we don't know. So Mason, here's the first question. What is ABM marketing?
Great question. I give kind of the three layers of the definition. So again, if you Google ABM, you're likely going to see a bunch of content from technology vendors that are sharing that you can run an account-based program by running ads through their technology, which that is not ABM. That is what is referred to as account-based advertising. That is a tactic within a larger ABM strategy, but that is not ABM at its core. So people kind of start there and then they go to the next level, which is, oh, ABM is really this like very comprehensive account-based approach in which we're trying to figure out who are our best fit customers. It's a holistic revenue strategy that aligns the revenue organization on a set of shared target accounts, which is the actual definition. We love that definition. The challenge with that is then they, generally speaking, again, as they're Googling ABM, as you're trying to figure out how do they get started with an account-based marketing strategy, they're likely largely running into tech vendors or larger agencies that help build kind of those big scale ABM programs that are very expensive to get started.
And very expensive. If we go back about 50K, right? 50K if you want to get your toes in the 6 cents water, 100K.
The math that I've done is if you wanted the sending platform, maybe 6 cents, but like a full scale ABM platform plus a data enrichment platform, plus the project to fully set those up and integrate those for full attribution and reporting, you're generally looking at a ballpark of a 200K tech stack.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it, 200K.
And then additionally, if you look at the process for implementation and integration, you're probably looking at 6 months and 300K in employees or outside agencies to fully get it set up. So for a lot of people, they're actually investing about $500,000 to quote unquote build their ABM program, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, which is where Scrappy ABM came from. And what I think is the truest definition, which is, again, it's a revenue strategy that aligns the entire revenue organization around a set of shared target accounts. Nowhere in there does it talk about technology. It's like you can use a podcast, and I love podcasting as an ABM strategy because it's your $32 a month tech stack. Yeah. You could use a Riverside or a StreamYard, and then Spreaker and Buzzsprout. That's it. Yeah. And you just got to invite people from LinkedIn. So it's just thinking through who is the audience, what are the channels that they're living in, how do we get right content in front of them, and how do we measure the success of our program? We refer to that as the 4 Ds. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but like that's the core of it. That's what ABM is.
Cool. I love the 4 Ds. Every good new founder has a great acronym to present. I know I've got 3 Ps. You got the 4 Ds. I was talking to Kevin Dorsett with KD. Let's just throw another D in there. He had the I said, man, I'm glad we all have content because I'd forget all this. I remember it in the moment. I go, man, what? I know. I think it's easy because I'm calling it 3 Ps and everybody else goes, what the heck is 3 Ps? It sounds like I go to the bathroom really bad. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe that's good feedback. I always say everything is feedback in this world, Mason. I think one thing with content is you've learned probably a long time ago, but more so as a founder, you got to have thick skin. Not everybody's going to agree with you. Not everybody's going to care. You're going to think the best video you put up is going to warrant a lot of views. It's going to get barely any. And then you're learning from that, right? And now you're taking those learnings and people are paying you and Scrappy ABM to come in and do it for them, right? So obviously you have a solution. There is a need in the marketplace. This brings me to the next question. Have some fun with this. What is the biggest misconception right now about account-based marketing?
I think the biggest misconception is that it's a technology. Mm-hmm. Most people, when they think about ABM, they think about the technology that's associated. ABM, from my perspective, is still the only marketing strategy that people say, I'm going to go buy ABM. People don't go buy content marketing. They don't go buy inbound. They build an inbound strategy. They build a content marketing strategy. They build a social media strategy. But people still say, we're going to go buy ABM.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, the biggest misconception. And then, you know, if you're past that, I think the next biggest misconception is just the time frame on expectations.
Mm, yeah, yeah. 12 to 18 months, is that safe from like first touch to purchase if they're outside the demand wheel?
It depends on a lot. So obviously like your average sales cycle, I've worked with clients in which I had an average sales cycle of 3 years because it was such a high involvement purchase decision. So again, from full awareness into acquisition is going to radically depend on your industry and your average sales cycle. But to get the full scale ABM program that people talk about, I think it's at minimum a 12 to 18 month process to fully build up, which is why I'm like super bullish on the crawl, walk, run approach and doing like a true crawl, which is like, you're going to crawl for 6 months. And the goal is, can we get right fit meetings on the calendar? And that's the measure of success. Yeah. Not did we generate revenue and not did we implement the right technology? It's like, can we get marketing and sales to work together and get meetings on calendar? That's the goal. Yeah. And like people just, nobody loves to crawl. Like the idea that you would go to your executive team and say, we're going to crawl for 6 months really isn't a good sales pitch. But like, that's what you have to do in order to build a truly successful program.
I think more people are willing to crawl than they have in the past because we got burnt. We made a lot of rapid decisions during COVID. We had money that was more at our disposal. I feel like people felt like they could make more mistakes. I can speak firsthand and say some of those mistakes are costly. Money, you can get money anywhere as a business owner till you cannot. Like I usually say, 3 things I learned as a business owner that I didn't know coming into it. Number one is it's your personal credit score that purchases everything. I don't know what a business credit score even is used for. You'd think they would maybe, you know, not have to use your house. So the next time you're upset at your founder, still be, but also remember, like they're probably doing everything they can within their personal means and the banking needs. Number two, I didn't realize the volatility of the financial market and how much of a swing it would be. And you'd feel that so much more as the owner, good and bad. And then three, I think I learned that, you can reinvent yourself in the same company over and over and over again. But consistency is where people are winning when they open up this company, right? So Scrappy ABM for it, fast forward 5 years, impossible that you wouldn't be successful if you still exist. A lot of people who get in the content game, Mason, this is the next question. I feel like they do it to think that there's money on the other side of it. They go, well, I can get leads, so I'm going to make content. I will argue that, yes, that can work. B, there's not a lot of joy in that. When you're creating content for yourself, not in an ABM way, so I have to be very quantifiable here. So not when you're, you know, the client says, hey, we're hiring you for ABM, da, 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 scrappy ABM. You yourself sit down and go, I want to create a piece of content. How do you approach that? Because some people will be very rigid with a calendar. Some people say, oh, yeah, I just use my notes on my iPhone. Other people don't really have a methodology. How do you approach it for yourself, not for your clients?
Personally, I focus on the reps, and that's not what people like to hear. They yeah. like to hear, oh, there's this incredible strategy behind it. But like, you know, again, for I think most people, when I started creating content on a near daily basis, like 3-4 years ago, the focus was what I refer to as learning in public. So again, at yeah. that time, I was the marketing director of a fintech company.
Yep.
So I was just actively sharing what I was learning. Then I transitioned to being a marketing director at a marketing agency. So I was actively learning what I was actively sharing whatever I was learning. Mm-hmm. And I've just done that for a while. When I launched Scrappy ABM, I still did that. But what I found is what I'm learning now doesn't really resonate with my audience because I'm learning how to be a business owner, not a marketer. Mm-hmm. So those are different things. So now I just actively share what we're learning with our clients. So it's still yep. actively sharing what we're learning, just a different framing. So yep. I think that it takes a lot of the stress out of it. And it focuses a lot more on, again, you know, if I've made it this far in my career and I've learned these things, I can almost guarantee that there's somebody that's 3 years earlier that hasn't learned these things yet.
Yes.
So if I just share what I'm learning right now or share what I've learned in the past couple of years, that's going to help somebody else in their journey. And again, I don't really have to overthink it. I don't have to overcomplicate it. I can just actively share. And as a result, people may follow along. They'll get better value out of it. They may not, and that's okay. But I just focus on if I can show up on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Trying to help somebody, then that's good enough for me.
Cool. Let's peel out and get personal, okay? We're going to come back and hit hard into ABM and scrappy ABM. I'd like to ask 3 or 4 questions that are going to bring you to out of your conventional B2B place. So bear with me here. Number one, if you could remove any part of yourself, what would it be and why?
I don't know. Like, and I know this is going to be like such a dumb answer, but if I imagine like, oh, I want to remove the difficult situations that I've been through, I wouldn't be who I am today. That's something that a lot of people I'm sure have said previously. Like, I actually really like who I am. I like my life. I like
yeah
what we have. So like,
yeah, yeah,
I'm good. Like good, I really like, I like myself. So
you'd remove nothing. Look at that, guys. That's the first time anybody said nothing. And I love that answer.
I'm sure if I really thought about it, that there's something, but like on the surface and as a gut reaction, I'm very happy with who I am and the life that I have and what we've built. So I'm good.
Professionally, if you've made one mistake, you could go back and redo, what would it be?
Yeah. I left a job horribly and burned a lot of bridges unintentionally. I shared this publicly, but long story short, it just wasn't the right work environment for me. It was a pretty toxic work environment. It's been quite a few years since.
Yeah.
So I turned in my notice and, you know, I got called in the CEO's office and he asked me why I was leaving. I was probably smug, if I'm being honest. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to this agency. It's, you know, Fortune, they work Fortune 500 clients, Inc. 5,000, fast growing, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Like all these awards. It's where I think I need to go for my career. And he said to me, you know, you're a waste of my space and my time. So go ahead and just get out. So he was not super kind on my exit. Mm-hmm. And then they demoted me and cut my salary in half for the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I just walked out, but I walked out very, very angrily.
Sure.
And I damaged relationships on my way out. It was a heat of the moment. If I could go back, yeah. I would have not left the way that I did, very angrily, yeah. and left other people in a lurch, because the people that I left in a position that was not beneficial for them. And it didn't impact those that had demoted me. It impacted the immediate team. So if I could do anything differently, I would have done that differently. I just would have stuck it out and taken care of the team that was present.
I think we all have those things to a degree, right? And when we look back immediately, it's hard because you kind of know, like the emotion takes over. And then kind of this regret of, I wish I did it differently, and the maturity in the process of evaluating. And for me, that ended up in a lot of amends and some just acceptance, you know, of, I'm not going to say I'm sorry. Doesn't mean I'm right. It just means let's move on. You know, it's just one of those things where you go, well, man, if I could rewrite the first 45 years of my life, Mason, I'd probably rewrite about half of it, right? Keep the other half. And someone said, which half? I said, good stuff. They said, that's too easy, man, because you can't have one without the other. It's counterweights, right? Yeah. It's like the I don't know what good is unless I know what bad is. I don't know what joy is unless I know pain and suffering. I don't believe life is simply pain and suffering. I believe the foundation of it is, but evolution puts us in a place where we don't have to have pain and suffering. Or we go to the other end of it where we say, I'm addicted to everything because I never want to have pain and suffering. So I'm just going to take things to avoid it. And I found that somewhere in the middle is a very sweet spot. You want to feel the pain. You want the pain to also subside, but it usually does it naturally. Like it doesn't need the speed that we think it does. To your point, a lot of these things take care of itself. Time and consistency are so boring, but man, Mason, would you agree that there's not much sexier things in the business than patience and consistency and showing up every day?
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody talks about the concept of you need to be patient with the business, and I fully agree. Yeah. I've actually heard this framing from, it's either Gary Vee or Alex Hormozi, one of the much larger voices in the space than myself.
Right next to us though. And they're right below us. Oh yeah. They're catching up.
They framed up the concept of patience. It's just like recognizing that this thing is going to take time. So what do I do in the meantime that moves something else forward while I wait
really
for that other thing to come up? So like patience is really just figuring out what to do in the meantime. And that's been really helpful framing because in building Scrappy ABM, like I can only close so many clients at a time. I can only generate so much new business. I can only deliver on so many clients at a single time.
Yeah.
So again, in the patience of waiting for budget approval on specific clients, I could email them every other day and say like, what's going on? What's going on?
Like a good old SDR.
But they've already given me the verbal. They've already said they want to move forward. It's truly a question of like finance. I can't do anything other than wait for their 2024 budgets to be approved, which they have been. Yeah. They've signed. We're good. So yeah,
there you go.
But in that meantime, I started working on other things so that I didn't just waste the time trying to be patient for them to do something else. So anyway, I just think it's a matter of finding out what to do.
I think that's brilliant because I don't know about you, but I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to patience. I will sabotage the idea once it's put in because now I'm restless. I'm bored with it when everybody else is going, hold on, man. We're just getting this thing down. Like you just got all the percolation out of your damn head and got the good ideas and got rid of the bad ones. Just stay away from us. And I'm always, I don't like to say it, but I say a lot of people I hire to protect from myself. I mean, the fast thinking, let's add this product today. And someone's like, no. And I found that is, do you find it can be lonely, Mason? Do you ever get lonely?
Yeah. I mean, all the time, but
yeah,
like, I don't expect anybody else in the journey that is the current stage of Scrappy ABM. We're working 12, 14, 16 hours a day. And that's not to show off a hustle culture. This is not the life that I want to live forever, but it's what's required for today. But in doing so, there are things that I've had to say no to. I spend time less with my friends. Admittedly, I spend a little bit less time with my spouse. She understands that this is the current season. But then it's also when it's not that time, like I'm very intentional. I try my darndest not to work on a Saturday. So Saturdays are protected time. I only dedicate that time to family. Whereas Monday through Friday and some on Sunday, it's working. So it's lonely, but admittedly, as I've talked with a variety of entrepreneurs that are far more successful than I am, that's the price of admission. Hmm. Like there is a season of loneliness and a season of no, because you're some psychotic individual that is working 16 hours a day to like, and again, another quote from Alex Hormozi of like, if you're an employee, you go to work and your bank account increases. If you're an owner and your bank account stays the same, you're happy. Mm. Like there's a season in which the goal is to just see the bank account stay the same because we're investing so heavily in the business that it can continue to grow. And that's a season that I'm in. So it's a lonely season, but it's a price of admission to build and to see the impact on the world that I want to see.
Mm. What are you doing this all for then? Why can't you just go get a, you know, normal job, work 30 hours a week, get a paycheck, health benefits? Why all this? Why the fuss?
I don't know. I enjoy it. I genuinely super enjoy this. Like you know, for me, I learned how to build a Scrappy ABM program because I was given parameters of we need to build a program, but you were given no budget and it worked.
Yep.
And then it just kept working. And then I realized that that's not the case for everybody. And I realized, you know, I remember hearing from somebody 3 years ago that was really big in the ABM space. It's like nobody's actually cracked how to build a repeatable just ABM framework that works in general.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't exist. You can't Google, like you've got the team framework and that's helpful, but it's not a true campaign. Like it's more of the thought process or how do you structure the leadership team, not the actual implementation. So now I'm just so focused on how do I help somebody that was 4 years ago, 5 years ago version of me that's been given a task that honest to goodness, hundreds of thousands of other B2B marketers have been given the same task and they have failed. Mm-hmm. And I have the opportunity because we live on a lot less than we make. So I don't have to go make as much money as possible. I can actually just like help a lot of people and build the right processes and the right programs and the right frameworks and the right playbooks that then equip somebody to be more successful at their job. And again, for my goal is to convert like 1% of people that I impact into actual customers. The other 99%, if they just get value out of the content that I create and then out of our team, because our team is growing, that's cool. I'm totally fine with that. So like, I enjoy it. At this point, I did talk to my wife, you know, 3 months in when the business was starting to take off. I was like, look, if I need to go get another job, like this is the time.
Yeah, this is
like,
it. This Thunderdome, like, let's go.
Because if not, I'm in and we're going for it. She's like, I think you've gotten a taste of entrepreneurship and freedom from an employer. I don't think you can ever go back. And I was like, crap, you're right. So like,
you can't.
That's why I'm doing it. I just really love it.
Yeah.
I don't think I could be an employee anymore. And you know, as I look at what I'm trying to build with our team, I think it's going to just help a lot of people. And for me, that's worth it. And then actually I will share from a faith perspective. I thought I was gonna be a pastor. Didn't end up being a pastor, obviously, but I kept working in sales. And I had a friend that was in ministry that just said, like, Mason, you're really good at making other people money. If you can make other people money, they'll pay you well to do that. And somebody has to fund the church. So for me personally, a lot of when I'm doing all of this, I'll make good money and I can just give more money and fund the church to go on mission.
Oh yeah.
Cause somebody's got to fund it. So like, that's my job.
Well, there's one thing I've learned is that I don't know how the world works, but I think I have a good idea and that encourages me just because, you know, I've got a couple kids and I've got a couple stepkids and they're getting older, you know, and you kind of go, well, then what? And then you go, well, they're going to be kids. They're going to be adults. And go, well, then what? And the other day, I'm going to share this with you. I had I'm not gonna give you the context. It crossed my mind, Mason. I don't know if you had one of those moments yet. You're pretty young. We're just the fragility of life flashes right before you. Like it just goes, damn, this goes quick, you know? And for me, the context of it was there was a, you know, there was an animal that passed away. Not my animal, but I mean, I saw it in real time and I was there and I thought, huh, just like that, gone. And everybody's life's moved on. And they said, this is the depressing stat I Googled afterwards. They said, within some amount of days after your funeral, 98% of people will never say your name again. They said within like 4 months, your family will stop talking about your funeral and you being dead again. And within a year, you're mentioned very rarely. And I thought, well, that doesn't bother me. Nobody needs to talk about me. And then it kind of froze up. And I said, well, what is this all for then? You know, like, what is this all for? I wanted to change the world. I wanted to make sales, you know, my own version of better. And I thought, well, God, what if I don't have enough time? What if I can't get it done? And all of a sudden this lightning bolt hit me. It's like, get to work, be a good dad, be a good person. Have you had one of those moments yet in life where it just smacks you across the face and you get ultra clear on what you want? And there's no question about that. And if so, what was that moment for you?
Yeah, I mean, so we talked about a little bit earlier that in the course of a business, you can reinvent yourself and reinvent the business. Scrap ABM has had in the 7 or 8 month run that we've had thus far, there's been like 4 versions of Scrappy ABM. And I think the moment we got really clear is I knew generally what I wanted to build and create, which was I wanted to help people build ABM programs that didn't require the massive tech stack. The ways in which we did that were varied. But some of those really early clients that just had trust, because again, there was no brand. It was just like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had trust in me personally. And seeing what we did for them and how successful it was. And it was like, there were three very specific things that we did. Because the first pitch to Scrappy, IBM had 16 different service lines. Because I was essentially just pitching like, I don't know, there's all stuff that I can do. Like
I got software. I know what I'm doing. We're good.
Yeah, like just essentially here's a list of tactics that we can run.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And again, I looked at it, looked at what we were able to accomplish. And that's where it then came to, I think these things are repeatable across other companies. I think these things can be implemented across other companies. And I also think that these things are things that are not properly and currently well documented online or easily accessible, which then became the vision of, okay, well, let's do that. Like, let's work with great clients, build incredible programs, in very great detail, document everything about the process, give that to them. So they now have repeatable, actionable playbooks. And then we can also release it publicly. Not necessarily, obviously, their exact playbook, but like the templatized version,
yeah.
Which is, here's how you build a closed loss program. Here's how you build a missed meeting program. Here's how you de-anonymize your website traffic to see product and pricing page views that you can then reach out around. And then taking those as a starting point, here's how you build into an actual ABM program. Here's how you build a podcast that actually, we've got some clients that are in the top 10 for their category in their country. Like,
that's amazing.
We built some great podcasts. So like, how do you take those things that we're learning from the clients that we're working with, templatize it and actually give it away so you can help a lot of people? So that's like, that's where the vision got clear. And I think it especially got clear, like, when, you know, my wife and I are able to, before we stepped out to the business full time, we were able to cover our expenses. And I got one contract, and I was like, okay, that one contract is an annual contract that covers our living expenses for a year.
That's amazing. And like,
they're a healthy, they're a happy client. I have a 12-month time frame to build anything. And as long as I deliver that one client, we will be fine. But I have a 12-month time frame to where we don't have to take any more money out of the business. So that one client, we live on that one client. The other 16 that we work with are all reinvested back into the business to hire more people, to build up better processes, to like scale this thing up. And again, we deliver really well for that one client. I personally still manage that one client to make sure that they're always happy.
Heck yeah.
But like, that's when I got clear. As I was like, okay, don't get me wrong, we're not going to get rich on this one client, but like, we will maintain, we will exist. So as long as we exist, I can take a year to build everything else.
You can. Now, when I go to ABM and type it on YouTube, I see a lot of Sastr videos. So if I just type in ABM, there's two top videos that come up. Sastr has 7 to 8K views. And this is where I go, okay, this is where I need to talk to Mason, because it's cool that I can see the VP of marketing demand for Snowflake, but sister, I don't have that budget. You know, sorry, I'm not going to listen to it, because even if it says design on a dime, God bless Snowflake, she's probably ultra talented. I know that I don't have that money. I know that I'm not going to invest in the software they do this. So I'm going to go, and then how do I find you? And then let's walk through this YouTube world, because I think if you had to lock me in a room for a year and say, where would you want to spend the time? I'd say, honestly, studying YouTube. It's kind of where I've been in my head. I try and explain this at a high level, and I still find to shut up, Steve, learn more about it before you talk about it. I look at it like this. I need to find out about ABM. I probably have some choice words. What the fuck is ABM? You know, what the, why is this hard? You know, but really when I get to my namaste, I go to YouTube, I go to Google. How do I deploy ABM? How expensive is ABM? They don't type who are ABM consultants, but there's a lot of ABM consultants out there, right? And so I go like in a sea of noise, how would you tell someone who's looking on YouTube, besides your podcast and including your podcast, how are they going to use YouTube to learn about ABM, account-based marketing? Are there specific channels you would want them to go to? And I'm going to give you the profile of them. They are a founder, 2 to 5 million is a projected year that they've got a little bit of money. They haven't raised any VC, but they just say, gosh, I know that for our segment, we need to go account-based. I'm going to go on the YouTubes here when I'm rocking my kid to sleep, and I'm going to start finding people. Who do I need to tell them to go find? Give me the top three resources that are available on YouTube for account-based today.
I'm going to subvert the question with a very different answer. The first thing that I recommend for building an ABM program is don't build an ABM program. Build a sales program.
Ooh.
And I know that's very odd, but ABM is the alignment of marketing and sales. And I've talked with a lot of people that only have a seller that's a heroic seller that is like why they continue to exist. Or it's a founder-led sale that's never going to actually follow a process.
Hey, that's so, me. Yeah, I'm number two. I can throw myself in that bucket selfishly and go, tell me more about that.
So you should start by building repeatable sales activation playbooks. And when I say sales activation, often when you think about the alignment between marketing and sales, the reason that there's a lack of alignment is because marketing may pass over a lead list that's based on somebody that viewed 10 blogs and opened about 16 emails.
Yep.
And we say, that's a hot lead. Go reach out.
Yep.
And there's not a clear reason to reach out. And that's where I'm really focused for a lot of our clients. It's like, what's the reason to reach out? So that's why I recommend starting with sales activation playbooks is if you can think about what is a tangible action that someone did that gives us an actual reason to reach out. So
tangible action is not a website visit. It is, if I'm in lead forensics and they visit my page 10 times, would that be considered?
I think it's more specific pages. So like if they, I gave the example a bit earlier, but like they viewed your product pages, you see the time on page is like 4 to 5 minutes of a product page. Yeah. Then they go to the pricing page and then they go to the schedule a call page and they don't book a demo. Like, if they're a right fit customer, we should be reaching out to those people. And
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. You're not going to get hundreds of those people on a weekly basis. You might get 10, you might get 20, but we're not reaching out to those 10 or 20.
Yeah.
But if you can start there, then you build that repeatable process that easily transitions into an ABM program. And here's why. You've now built the sales handoff point between the marketing and sales teams for your ABM program by starting there.
Yep.
And then you actually go build an ABM program that funnels right fit accounts into your trigger point. So again, if you're getting started with ABM, you actually build a great outbound program. And there's way more people that speak about good outbound sales than there are that actually speak about non-high tech ABM.
Yeah, of course.
To my knowledge, I am literally the only person that is dedicated to the crawl stage of ABM. I've been saying that for 8 months. I've not found another person that talks about it dedicated.
Yeah.
So like, if that's what you're looking for, surprise, I'm the only one. So like, there are other people that maybe allude to it, but there's nobody else that's dedicated. So again, that's why I say, if you are trying to figure out how do I start with ABM, start with actual good outbound sales playbooks and good outbound sales processes.
Yeah.
And then you may actually want to go learn good inbound marketing programs.
Yeah.
And then you figure out what's the intersection of those two, where I can build a good inbound marketing program that gets my accounts to where I need them to go to then appropriately trigger our sales team with a good reason to reach out. When you marry those two up, that's how you build a good and successful ABM program.
Woo. Did you guys hear that? Okay. So you don't need to, and you kind of need to. And I think it's something where I'd say to you, here's my next question. Okay. So year one, just celebrated your opening business. And I looked at it, I said, gosh, we had 12 clients. None of them are really that much alike. Gosh, I don't really know. I know how to teach account-based marketing when I have a big budget, when I have marketing peers to go by. But how do I, as a lean founder, start to look at things and go, man, I don't really know who my ideal customer is. So if I need to know that before I go out account-based, as a lean founder, is it too early to do that? Or are you just saying I'm not looking at the right things or not looking close enough?
Great questions. Sangram Verger released a book called Move that he co-wrote with a guy named Brian Brown. Mm-hmm. And they refer to, there are three stages of go-to-market maturity. The first is problem market fit. So the question is like, do you even solve a viable problem that you can sell to customers?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a problem, period?
Yeah.
Like some people built, especially with how much VC funding and PE funding was available, people built products that didn't actually solve a problem. So like, do we have a problem market fit? Do people buy? The next is then product market fit. Generally, I think ABM needs to come at product market fit because I'll give you an example. Scrappy ABM does not run ABM for ourselves right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't make sense. We are in problem market fit. We have worked with 22 different clients, and I am actually a 50-50 split, which is very interesting to me, on B2B SaaS companies. Now, there's they're varying. Like, we've got some fintech, we've got some sales tech, some martech, but like B2B SaaS. And then the other side is like marketing adjacent companies. So like marketing agencies, marketing event companies, very significant public figures in the marketing and sales space, like revenue individuals. So like I work with both. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one is like the right fit for either. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, admittedly, I've existed for 8 months. These people are probably coming to me because they know Mason Cosby, not because they know Scrappy EBM. My brand hasn't existed long enough for me to get outside of my own networks. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm in problem market fit. So until you've got established product market fit, and when you know you have product market fit, is when you can look at your customer base and you see specific customer cohorts, and there's similarities you can identify within those cohorts that have the best results. So like if you're a founder, look at your clients that have the best results and understand what are the nuances and the similarities between all these different customers. It might be industry. It may also be, for some tech companies, it's technographics. It's the other technologies that they're working with that integrate super well with yours. For other agencies, it may not be an industry. Mm-hmm. It may not be a technology. What it might be is you've got a specific personality type that you work super well with, which is super common in like the content space.
Yes.
So those are the things you look at your cohorts, you see who has the best results, and then you figure out the similarities. That's where your product market fit. The asterisk I always put on that is for our friends that are very vertical specific. We have a client where their total addressable market is 1,000 accounts total. Like that's just not large enough to do anything else besides ABM.
Right.
So again, they are their early stage, but like we already have 10% of our market penetration because we have 100 customers and there's only 1,000 potential customers. So like, we're just going to run ABM to get the other 900. So like for them, why would you run anything else if you're vertical specific?
Yeah.
As a product, or the other component is like vertical plus department. Like I've worked with some clients that are B2B SaaS from a vertical perspective, which is still a huge vertical, but they only work with CS teams of recurring revenue models in the B2B SaaS space.
Sure.
So that's a small enough segment where they have the similarities of like, they're working with CS teams that are quota carrying. If you're vertical specific, then you can run ABM at any point because you're so clearly defined based on what your product is that it doesn't make sense to not run ABM.
Okay. Okay. This is cool. Okay. So let's kind of tie this up with a bow here. So Scrappy ABM, based off of what you told me, is the idea that whether it's oversimplifying here, a Google Sheet, or maybe a Google Sheet in a mailing campaign, or maybe a CRM that has some automation built into it and some personalization, some different sequence steps. It's really getting down to the list of companies that align to that problem market fit than product market fit. At what point in time, and who do I turn to if I'm a business that says, great, I'm a CEO and a founder, I don't have time to do this. Do I hire somebody? Do I get an agency? Like, what is my first step to assess and then trust that the information I'm being given is accurate? Meaning, I want to know if I'm too early for this, that vendor is going to look at me and say, you're too early for this. This isn't for you. What is the advice you'd give to that person, that she or he sitting there going, man, I think it's time for ABM. I don't really know, but I got to reach out and touch somebody. Who would you say besides Mason, yourself, that they should reach out and talk to just to get an opinion about maybe where we are in the ABM space, maybe how it's different than the other three that are acronyms like PLG. Give me those names because I think that will really help substantiate and give some proof to what you're doing.
One would be someone like Sangram, because Sangram was, in my book, I refer to him as the godfather of account-based marketing, but he's not an agency and he doesn't do services. He's an analyst firm. So again, Sangram's going to help you, or anyone really at GTM Partners specifically. They're all very well versed in account-based marketing. So they're gonna help you figure out. Then the other thing is not necessarily a person individually, but someone that works at a non-MarTech or sales tech company that has ABM as a part of their go-to-market motion. So that might be a director of account-based marketing, or that might be a VP of marketing that you know that may be running some form of account-based marketing, or is at least experienced enough to know what ABM is. Mm-hmm. The reason I say not MarTech or sales tech is because admittedly, most of those people are directly partnered with ABM vendors that are maybe agencies, and they're going to say, oh, you're definitely a good fit. You should go over. So like,
yeah,
I think in this context, like I'm happy to talk to you, but if you don't want to talk to me because I sell this service, I would reach out to a peer or someone like a go-to-market partners that's an analyst firm. And then the final component is specifically look up on LinkedIn people that are a part of Peak Community, because Peak is a marketing community that's largely ABM focused.
Cool.
And many of them don't work in MarTech or sales tech or an ABM agency, but they're all very well versed in ABM. And as a result, if nothing else, you can say, hey, I listened to this podcast with Steve and Mason Cosby. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out if ABM is for me. They recommended I reach out to somebody in the Peak community, and you look like you know what you're talking about. Would you be open to having a conversation? 9 out of 10, somebody's going to say yes.
Very cool. Free advice, right? And it is hard. I think you're probably finding out in the agency world, it's hard to be unbiased, right? Because people, well, does it work? And you're like, well, yes, the concept works. Does it work with you? I don't know. There's your personality. There's product market fit, problem market fit, all these things. And I say, if you really want to get a dose of like what it's like to wonder why all the people in the companies you worked in made the decisions they did, start your own company. It does not make you better than anybody, but it does give you a view maybe as to why businesses make decisions the way they do. I would recommend it to anybody to at least, if you feel that itch and you've got what Mason's had, which is, hey, I'm really good at content. Hey, I'm really interested in ABM. And I've got this thing called scrappy ABM that nobody's ever talked about before. That's how it happens. And then consistently doing that over 5 years, you will find yourself walking around a conference, seeing Mason, you go, geez, Mason seems to be doing really good. That happened overnight. And I'll go, no, it was not hardly overnight. But what you're doing and the way you're doing it and the niche you're filling seems great to me. It seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, this could be built for very lucrative software companies as well as very lean founders of non-SaaS and SaaS tech services. You go down the list. This could be for everybody. Or am I wrong in that it's specifically for SaaS and services?
So far, it's been primarily SaaS and services. But again, to be perfectly frank, I think that the playbook and the thought process works in any B2B organization.
Yes.
Again, it's literally like, I had to put it this bluntly. Did somebody hit your product pages and your pricing page and your schedule a call page at the right fit kind of customer that you'd want to work with and they didn't book a call? You should probably reach out.
Yeah.
And like, that's the starting point. So if you have to find somebody that it doesn't work for, like it's just that simple as a starting point. So also I said we were gonna talk about the 4Ds. I'm gonna quickly outline it for anybody that's thinking about a program.
Yeah.
And I'll use the example. So 4Ds, data, distribution, destination, direction. So data is who we're going after. How do we trigger a program to get started? Yep. So again, who we're going after, we'll have an ICP fit criteria around these are the right fit kind of customers. And then trigger would be product page, pricing page, and schedule a call page, not or, and. So highly specific trigger. Mm-hmm. Distribution. How are we getting in front of these people? What are the strategies, strategies, tactics, and channels? So again, in this context, let's say we're going to use an outbound sequence. We're going to send them an email. We're going to give them a call. We're going to engage with them on social. There we go. Mm-hmm. Outbound sequence. Destination. What are we pointing them to?
Yeah.
What's the content? What's the landing page? What's the offer? Lastly, direction. How are we tracking if they're moving closer towards becoming a customer or further away? In this context, to get it really simple and get it started, click-through rates, open rates, reply rates. You have all of that available within your existing CRM and your marketing automation platforms, and it's how you can get started in literally 30 days. It's like,
yeah,
that is how I would get started.
This is super dope, man. I've had a good chance. I mean, this is cool to kind of hear it less sophisticated than either I've, and I don't mean that in a, you know what I mean. It is, you've broken it down.
We've simplified it.
We simplified it. Thank you. I like complicated shit. There's no bones about it. Like I like it. It never works at scale. I've learned, like you said, is my biggest takeaway, Mason, from today is I'm going to rewind back to something you said. I want to reshare it with everybody. Something you heard, it was Gary Vee or somebody else who said something with like, I'm going to let you say it. Here's my version of it. And then we're going to give it to you. Hey, you've already figured out the good idea. Implement it. Have someone come and put process behind it. Get the hell out of the way and find something else interesting to do instead of ruining and sabotaging your company. What was the actual version of that, Mason?
Yeah. Patience is just finding out what else to do in the meantime while you wait.
Yeah. That's a lot more elegant than what I said, but that maybe I personalized it too much, which is I have learned if it's Monday And even if it's President's Day and I go, cool, I'm done at 3 o'clock. We're going to wrap with Mason. We're going to send this over to post. My first inkling is to, oh, no, I can't do that. Can't do that. And then I go, well, why not? And I go, the only limitation and the extension upon my own business is myself. I have great contractors that work here. I think part of what you're going through right now, and it's not that I've been doing this for longer than you. I guess by years, I've failed once already, so I can give you lessons of what not to do. I am okay with that now. I am okay with hanging it up on a Monday and saying, well, Steve, really, you've been working since 6:30 a.m. Like, you had some breaks in there, but it's a Monday. Everybody else really didn't work today. It's okay, because patience is the opposite. That is patience. I've done the opposite and it doesn't work out. Getting ahead, staying ahead, trying to always think. I think slowing down and giving things time to saturate and mature is how the world works. And I think it's what people are craving now more than ever since, God, 2020, we all got spun up, spun out, and we all came out looking a different way of confused and troubled. And so I think people like the words trust, scrappy, value. You know, 3 years ago, we couldn't count how much money was being spent. Nobody had a budget. We all knew it would fall out. It really feels to me, and I'm going to ask you this last question, and we're going to tell people where they can find you. It feels to me like people are, they either know or they don't right now. They're going to run to you and say, Mason, I've seen your content for a year and a half. I see you're doing this. I want to hire you. Can we meet next week? Maybe it takes 2 meetings, 3, but there's never a doubt that they're going to work with you, probably sooner than later. And then there's people who come to you and say, hey, Mason, I want to learn a little bit about this. I know within that first meeting, whether they want to do it or they're curious about doing it. And to me, I wanted you to share with people what those are like, because you have a good network. I'm assuming some people have came in cold to you. If not, we'll find a different way to answer the question. What is the difference in those meetings and the outcomes of people who come and say, I don't know you, but I know your content, versus, hey, I know so-and-so, they know you, they know Steve Schmidt. They said, you're a good guy. Let's do business. What are those two different inbounds like? And this will probably be the best advertisement for your company ever.
Yeah. I mean, if you followed along, because I've been talking pretty publicly for 3 or 4 years now. If you followed along, you're right. It's a pretty simple close, because I've existed long enough that people know generally who I am and what I talk about. And it's been consistent long enough that there's trust. So those are pretty easy. Generally, and I don't mean that as like a, it wasn't easy to talk online for 4 years and do podcast for 4 years and, you know, wait for people to come in. But once they're there, they're like, yeah, this is what we're thinking. We've heard you talk about this. Like, what is the exact price for us? So it's more of honestly, it is about a one call close. So it's a pitch on the first call based on the information that they provide. I'm like, this is the kind of the direction. And it's like a 2-minute pitch. I'm like, yeah, that's what this would cost. And they're like, cool. Let me circle back internally and we'll talk next week. I meet with the larger team. I present, they talk, we send a contract, we're done. The other people that, and there have been people that have come through a referral. They've come through, I have had some inbound SEO, which has been interesting because I'm literally a one-page website, but they take longer. They take a couple of calls. They take a lot more explanation of the thought process. Because especially, again, ABM, I have had some people come in that are trying to buy software.
Yeah.
Like, you, I don't know that you read the website.
Not scrappy software, scrappy people.
So again, scrappy methodologies. There's further explanation on that front.
Sure.
But I generally quickly know, I don't think we're so overwhelmed with, which we do have some, we have a solid pipeline, but we're not so overwhelmed at this point that I'm doing a immediately disqualify. I'm like, nah, you just don't even know. Like,
yeah.
So I generally know, like, I'm going to work this. I may be pleasantly surprised, but I mean, we're closing at like a 45% close rate right now.
It's great.
Because I can say from the front end, generally speaking, I'm pretty confident this is going to come in based on how you talked. Based on how you talked, I'm pretty confident this isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
And I disengage pretty quickly, or I let it run its course. I educate. They go run it on their own. It's been also very interesting as they try to run it on their own. They come back about 2 months later and ask us to do it for them.
Yeah, like, of course.
It's all good.
Price is doubled. Price is doubled. Sorry. No, I'm kidding. Mason, thank you so much, man. Like, let's tell everybody where they can find you so they don't have to deploy account-based marketing to go find you. Let's make it easier on them. Where can they find you, and why would they want to find you? I like that second part to the question.
Yeah. for starters, I feel like a little bit like Spaceballs sometimes, but everything is scrappy ABM. So like scrappy ABM the podcast, scrappy ABM the website. If you go look scrappy ABM up on LinkedIn,
it works.
Generally the first thing that pops up. If you Google scrappy ABM, my dumb face is everywhere. So like just Google scrappy ABM and I'll show up. And then why? Again, I kind of alluded to it, but we are the only ABM service provider that provides step-by-step programs for the crawl stage of account-based marketing. So I know that nobody loves to do this, but again, I've got a six-month-old daughter. It doesn't matter how much I invest in the right equipment at this stage of her growth. She will not be a runner. She just can't be. She's not going to run. She's 6 months old.
That's my girl. Her and I can high five.
She can learn to crawl.
Yeah.
And then she'll learn to walk and then she'll learn to run. So if you're looking for someone that can help you crawl, that's what we do.
Getting the foundation is important. What I just heard from Mason was a reminder to myself that running is my nature. I am a horse who likes to get out and race, but without a foundation there, it can crumble quickly. And if you're going to invest in ABM, invest a little dollar menu budgets. I believe Chris Walker coined that, dollar menu budgets. Test small. Once you get validation, it works. Pour more into it, pour more into it, pour more into it. Pretty soon shaving become a pile. Mason, if you're out there, listeners, founders, that's kind of the target audience we're going for. I don't do ABM. I just want to be very clear. We do kick-ass content for YouTube. We ghostwrite for 16 different founders right now, and I have a bunch of freelance writers. That is the extent of what we do, and we manage a podcast and invite people on, and we have a lot of things on the back end, but that is it, and we're getting better at niching down to that too. If you said, well, I want a specific group of accounts, I'd say go to Mason. That's not us. And so to help delineate and draw the line of where you can and can't go, we'd work together with a Mason. He would help develop the data. He might develop some of the content, but ultimately we would say it's not us, right? Because as a one-man company, Mason clearly stated you have to be ultra-focused on what you're doing. And for us, ABM is something that we are going to do in 2025 as a company. First things first, though, Mason, figuring out who our ICP is. So I appreciate your answer to that question. I appreciate you coming on the Magnetic Podcast. That's it. I'm out of voice, man. Thanks so much. Any parting words for our listeners before we cut them loose here, Mason?
It's tempting to, if you want to start an ABM program, Google, how do I get started with ABM? I'd recommend starting by Googling, why does ABM fail? Identify the problems that you have, fix those first, and then you can build an ABM program.
I like that. Reverse engineering Google. Why does it fail? Not how do I get started? It's kind of like if you're going to get married and you said, why do marriages fail? And someone say, why do you type that? And you say, well, I don't want it to fail. So I want to figure out the first things I need to do is how do I keep this thing safe?
Exactly.
Cool. Mason, thanks so much. Thanks for being a positive light in a sea of content, a sea of opinions. Obviously asked you on for a reason. We enrolled about 720, just so you know, informed a new experiment. Enrolled 720 people in that we said we'd want them onto the podcast. Our take rate thus far is 9%. And so we're measuring those we do not want and those we would want on. And so that's going to be a fun experiment to share later. We'll never share the details of it, of course. But secretly, just so you know, you were one of those that I did want on. So you're on that side of the data. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to the Magnetic Podcast. We hope you were enlightened. We hope you heard something that you liked. We'll be back and we'll be back and we'll be back. As Mason said, patience and consistency. I'm your host, Steve Schmidt, the CEO and founder of Magnetic. Mason Cosby, the founder and Scrappy ABM.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.